This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
It is 8 minutes after 3 o'clock. WSMI now. Our guests in studio, we have Don Bishop and Glenn Bishop, two of Walter Chick Bishop's boys, two of his kids. Out of how many were there? Six kids, all right. What we're doing is talking about the celebration of life that's going to be taking place Saturday at the Litchfield Community Center, 1 to 7 in the afternoon. You know, Terry had a great conversation with a couple of the boys earlier this week, and we're going to do it with Don and Glenn today because we want to talk about the Code of the West, the Cowboy Way, some of the things that... Let's get started. We'll start with Don, because what I wanted to say is I don't know a true descriptive way to describe this book, because this is one of the neatest things that I've ever read. The book's called The Code of the West, Then, Now, and Forever. And it most definitely portrays the lifestyle that you had growing up and carrying on in your life now. And it was the way Chick lived his life.
Yes, sir.
So tell me, if you would, Don, I'll ask you first. Tell me how this came about.
This book came about mostly because my little brother Ben had started a little laser business, and I kind of was helping him.
Okay.
And we went to one of his shows, and I asked him if I could put a plaque up that I had written about the Old West, more or less, and it sold really well, you know, and this was down in Oklahoma City. He was at a show down in Oklahoma City. So anyway, I thought to Lisa, talking to my wife Lisa, I said, why don't we buy our own laser and see about making like little heirlooms instead of the way Ben was doing it. Was like a trophy shop, and you had every name right and every this, right, you know. I thought, man, if they could just be reprinted all the time and then sell them at a booth. And it turned into a big deal where we were going to Las Vegas to the National Finals Rodeo. We have two big booths out there. We go to the Houston Stock Show Rodeo. We're getting ready for Cheyenne right now, and then we've got a big one in Amarillo, and it's just amazing. But I've written these little plaques for the laser business, and then my artist, Justin Wells, said, you know, this would make a great book. And,
sure.
You know, it took me about a year before, and then some of the customers started saying the same thing. And so Lisa started prodding me, and I started organizing the plaques in chapters, and then I started writing the prefaces on the page before them, either telling something about the Old West or telling something about growing up in Litchfield, or how the poem came about, more or less. And people loved it. I think we're in our fourth or fifth printing, and we don't sell them except for on the website and at her booths. And we've had people tell me it's their favorite book.
Well, yeah. I must say, the way the book is laid out, it is, as you say, there is a great piece of artwork. Your artist, Justin, is incredible, artwork.
He can draw more like Will James than anybody on the planet. And, of course, he passed away, so I won't get any more of it, or artwork from him. But like I used to always tell people about the book, at least I know the artwork is good.
Oh, well, the book is.
Yeah.
So on the left side is a story about how literally the poem came about, or it ties into the poem.
Yes.
And on the right is a poem that your dad may have started and you finished, or
yeah, there
you
were several
printed.
Several of them dad started, and I would finish it, or I don't think there's anything there that he wrote the whole thing, but anyway, we talked on the phone mostly back and forth since I was living in Oklahoma, and I remember when we got done with the first real one, The Code of the West, where I jotted down a bunch of stuff because I've been reading a lot of Dad's books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I've got about 300 of his books now, all the Old West books. Amazing collection. But when I got done with that plaque, he told to my wife, he said, Lisa, and he knew we were kind of struggling a little bit at the time. He said, this plaque alone could probably buy you a new house.
Really?
And of course, Lisa's probably like, oh, yeah, right. And me too. But looking back, we probably wouldn't have been able to stay in the business, but everybody loved that one Code of the West. And it's just cowboy values. You know?
Yeah.
And Dad, I remember Dad wrote the first line of that after I had most of the rest of it down there, and Dad came up with that, I don't even remember what it says. Something about to, I haven't read it in a while, but the, about the handshake is more valuable than you know, writing it down. You know?
Oh yeah. Now, Glenn, I want to ask you. Don goes to Oklahoma. You're sitting there taking care of the ranch, doing the farming, after being a pharmacist for years.
Correct.
I've heard stories about guys who get out of that career and go back to the land. What prompted that move for you? What brought that about?
I would have to say the fact is, I think I was the only child that really enjoyed the farming aspect that Dad enjoyed so much.
Okay.
And after he hurt his back, you know, I was still pretty young, he sold the farms. I mean, he owned a good amount of ground. And I would say that I probably would have gone to ag school had he not sold that ground. Instead, I was looking for a different occupation, and pharmacy looked like a good one to make money, and then I'd go buy my own ground. That's what I've done. I own a good amount of ground here in the county, and proud of that, but I'm the farmer son that Dad wanted, and we spent a lot of time and drove the country roads in this county more than anybody can understand, just looking at crops and things like that. And then as a side suit of that, a lot of my ground's in CRP, do a lot of hunting, and Dad was a heck of a quail hunter and everything, so I'm mainly pheasant. You know, Ben's probably the better quail hunter, but I'm the better pheasant hunter. And then so to occupy my time in the summer, I do a lot of fishing now, too. And he enjoyed the fact of bragging that I have time to do those things.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now, let me ask you this question. How about, I guess when you call yourself a farmer and a rancher, how did the horses come into play? I mean, I know your dad was a cowboy. He loved the horses. Have horses always been a part of your life from the time you were born?
We always had horses.
Okay.
We knew things were, Dad was getting old when he quit having horses at the house or around of any sort. And he was an amazing horseman in some aspects. He didn't necessarily have the patience with them very well, but he could pretty much tell you the breeding of a horse just by looking at it. And to me, a horse is just a horse, and I love to ride, but they are hay burners in reality to me. But he never considered them that way. They were just one of his true loves that you can't understand unless you have some and take care of them and ride them regularly. But as kids, we always had horses, and you know, there's no telling when and where we would, you know, because we weren't very far from the Lake Lou Yeager, and we'd be out riding up and down, you know, the trails. You know, back then there was a lot of motocross going around and a lot of good trails around the lake. And
Mid-State of Duro.
We used to ride a lot, you know, and the neighbors, you know, I mean, I know there's a lot of problems anymore, you know, but all the neighbors knew who we were, and we'd cross their land type of thing, and never was a problem. But, you know, something about the fact we always had horses on the hill, and even up there on the edge of town before we moved out to the hill. There is, you know, for the most part, very rarely was there a time when we did not have horses. And if we didn't, it was because Dad was a horse trader. I mean, I still.
But we always had candy.
We always had candy. That's one of the poems too, and that's a crazy story too. Because every time you drive down I-55, you get a little bit south of the rest area there, south of Hamel. There's a little barn on the west side of the road, right before that other overpass. That's where candy came from, and he always would say that, tell you that when we drove by on I-55, and candy was a pony that we all grew up riding, but it was, you know.
And the neighbors.
Yeah. All the friends and neighbors, you know, learned how to ride on a gentle pony that was Candy. But we always had horses. And, you know, but no, he always knew. He was a horse trader. That somebody offered him a price that he knew he was making money, it would be gone. And he was in his element going looking for one to replace it.
As much, John, as much as Glenn was influenced on the farming, Dad was patriotic flag waver, and he inspired in me the military,
right,
and the aviation. Wasn't good enough just to get my pilot license. I became an Air Force pilot, and then a Southwest Airlines captain for mostly from listening to him, you know, and pursuing my dreams. And I can remember as a little kid, we had that international scout, you know, that he would drive us around, and Mom was good at shifting that thing in the snow. She would take us to school in that little Scout. I think he ended up with two or three of them, and Brother Charles had one in high school, and then I had a couple of them. I bought one from Weidler's that needed a new engine, and Bob Wilson had one, and I switched the engine out and became a pretty good mechanic by the time I could really drive that thing. But to this day, I've got a beautiful 1979 International Scout.
I'll be darned.
It reminds me of my dad.
Well, you know, that Scout was an iconic vehicle for a long time. There's no doubt about that.
First SUV.
The original SUV.
Yeah.
But it wasn't only that. If Dad liked Johnny Cash, I love Johnny Cash. You know, if... Western Art. He liked Western Art. My whole house is full of Western Art. You know, I've got... he liked A-Fork saddles. I count them every day. There's 12 of them in my house. Yeah, I'm obsessed with the stuff that my dad loved.
Now, I want to go back to your laser business just a little bit. As I remember, I think you told me back at the hospital benefit when the Robinson boys were home.
Yes.
I think you said that you do a lot of laser work on saddles and leather and stuff like that. Is that correct?
It's mostly my wife doing most of the laser now, and our son, Tim. But most of it lately is on cowhide, which we do big things with. With our sawmill, we cut red cedar from Oklahoma. We mold it into big, nice trim, and then make a big frame. And then Lisa will...
Stretch cowhide into it?
Yeah, we glued the cowhide to masonite, and we figured out that it wouldn't burn up because it's so hot, and it still won't burn the hair. And it's beautiful. We do people's ranch brands and whatnot, and that's the best seller. And then always the Code of the West, and then they're called the Tradition, and One More Day, and the Saddle, and Don't Sell Your Saddle. There's just some that you know are going to sell it every thing. And my wife has sold stuff, and she hears the stories all the time. I don't spend much time in the booth. I get her there usually and help set it up, and then I got to fly. You know.
I understand.
So I'm out of there, but she hears so many great stories about other people, just same as us, same as we grew up, and same as they love their horses. We've heard some heartwarming stories about horses, and so it's been a really, really good business. And she loves to go to the Denver Stock Show. It's her favorite one, where there's generations. Like, here's Grandma, Mom, and a little kid, and they're showing a cow or something, you know, and they come by the booth, and she just loves it.
Oh. Glenn and Don Bishop, our guests, we're talking about growing up Bishop is what we're talking about. We're talking about growing up Montgomery County and growing up the cowboy way. So oldwestcedarmill.com is how you can get the book.
Yes.
And I will tell you, the book is a fascinating book, and it is the most beautiful artwork, some wonderful, wonderful poetry, and story after story after story about the Old West, about growing up a cowboy, a lot of stories about your dad and you guys growing up in here.
Yep.
Now, you told me a story, and it's in the book, about somebody who came to visit your folks when you weren't even there. Would you tell me that story again?
It was funny. You know, you go through pilot training, and you're with 100 of the brightest guys you've ever known in your life. And then 50 of them are in your section, and the other flight is another 50. And usually it washes down by about half. It's so tough. You know, the pilot training's so tough. Of course, Glenn Kornman was there a little bit there needed, and he got transferred right about the time that I moved. But I remember having a very nice dinner with Glenn and his wife Susie, and they were leaving, unfortunately. He was the schedule. He was a big wig. First assignment IP and T-38s. But long story short, you don't see a whole lot of these guys again. I mean, even though they're your brothers, I haven't seen them again ever since we graduated. We've scattered like a flock of quail, and I never see him again. But one kid, Chris Pertusi, was stationed at Scott. And after all the stories I'd told about growing up on the farm with the horses and the stuff, and most of my buddies, I think they thought I was just a good storyteller, a liar, more or less. And he showed up one day at my mom and dad's house and found out that everything I had told him was true, and it was even worse than what I had said. You know, at the mom, I swear, Mom it's surprised that we lived to be adults with all the stuff we did, you know. So, but anyway, Chris Bertuzzi was his name. Really nice kid, ironically from Texas. He was from Austin, and he came up when he was stationed at Scott and spent the day with my mom and dad telling stories and whatnot. And I said in the book, probably the nicest compliment I've ever had was when Chris told my mother he wished he could roam there up right here in Litchfield with me.
Huh. Well, that is a great story. That's a great thing to hear. Glenn, back to the farming end that you're still doing right now. Are any of the things that, well, I guess maybe that your dad introduced or started, are you still continuing some of those things on your farms? Are you raising horses too, or have you still got some horses in the family?
No, I don't, but that's a kind of a funny story.
Funny stories. Go on.
Was that, you know, I James and Owen Duff owned the Duff farm right at the edge of the lake.
Uh-huh.
And I knew James was getting old. Owen had already passed, and I confided in Dad I wouldn't mind buying that farm when it comes available. And everybody said it will be a subdivision. You know, somebody will buy it as a subdivision. And he told me, because I had always... My wife and I rode a lot, you know, when we were in college. We had these two Pasofino horses, greatest trail riding horses, and we loved them. And all of a sudden, he'd sold them, and they were gone. Well, Dad had promised to buy me two Pasofinos to put on the pasture at the new farm if I got it bought. And I did get it bought, but he never bought the horses for it. So I do not own any horses, but the potential is there.
Okay.
My wife, we're planning on building a new house there, but my wife plans on that being the ultimate place for grandkids to come visit, and I think a pair of Pasofinos will eventually happen.
Okay, that sounds good. You guys had a real setback happen in your life when there was a fire at your home place. So many, many, many wonderful memories of your lives growing up, your mom and dad's life, burned up in that fire. And yet when you rebuilt, your dad set about recovering, you know, other things or bringing some of that back as quickly as he could because they were so important. You talk about the 300 books. How many books burned up in a fire, you know, the first time? So, How was that after that fire?
It was devastating. You know, I mean, at that point, it's the house I grew up in from, I think, age six on, and then that night I was living in Hillsborough at the time. I drove like a maniac and basically stuck my car in the field trying to get on a hydroplane through the intersection and ran on up, but the things that were that I personally still had in that house that were gone, I couldn't imagine what Mom and Dad, you know, were thinking because they're nothing. They're just, yeah, you know, nothing left at all, and that feeling is just something crazy. But I will say that I think for me the guns that burn up, you know, because they, you know, guns were actually a very big thing in our family too, And if I can put a small plug in for Pheasants Forever Banquet this fall,
sure.
I have a replica of the Browning, a cheap replica of the Browning 22 rifle, the little one, you know, that Dad taught me to shoot with, in his honor that I'm going to have on the guns, because that's the gun that he taught me to shoot with, and I'm going to be getting, you know, some type of auction with that gun, but it was very special to me. But, you know, there's another thing. I mean, just he taught us to shoot, to hunt, and everything. But the devastation of the fire, you know. I mean, yeah, you'd find barrels of guns all curled up, and it was tough to do, and you know, it really, you know, forever it seems like all of us is like, oh yeah, that's in the closet behind the. That closet's burnt up and gone. It's hard to, you know, until you've been through it, it's hard to believe. And, you know, and I will have to admit too, I'd never lost a parent before. Now that I do, I feel bad that I wasn't more passionate to the friends that have lost them, because I really didn't understand that.
Oh, until you do, you don't, that's for sure.
Let me tell you my take on the house burning down. Sorry about that. I messed the mic up. I was in Madrid, Spain, and I get this phone call in the middle of the night. Captain Bishop, there's a phone call for you at the building desk. And I'm thinking, oh, no. You know, because a lot of my friends had those calls, and it always meant somebody died.
Mm-hmm.
So I was actually relieved. You know, he said, I'll never forget it. He said, Captain Bishop, nobody was hurt, but your mom and dad's house burned to the ground.
Yeah. That's a hard thing to hear. There's no question about it. Because when their house burned to the ground, your house burned to the ground. That's the house you grew up in. And I don't care if you've been gone from it for 30 or 40 years, your house burned to the ground.
It was a big deal for all of us, believe me. And I figured out how to send some roses to Mom and Dad from Spain. The very next day, I was going to be flying back. And my buddies were like, oh, you know, they heard. And they said, hey, Will, are you flying?
Yeah.
And I said, no, I can do it, you know. And it was the first time in my Air Force career I might have seen the house from the air.
Oh, my. Oh, that's something.
It was gone.
Let me ask this question. Your dad spent a good deal of his later life telling people about the Old West, and he was a go-to person for countless documentaries and books that other people wrote. He was quoted. He was used as technical advisor. How did he get started doing that? I mean, did somebody spread the word and all of a sudden the phone started ringing? Or how did that get going?
It was something else. I can remember way back in 95, they had the Circle 95 trail drive from Fort Worth, and they were simulating the old days where they were going all the way to Texas, like on the Great Western Trail through Oklahoma. And that's where Dad, the Oklahoma portion, met up with them and met the guys that had laid out the trail. One of the guys was related to Don Goodnight, or his name was Don Goodnight, related to Charlie Goodnight, you know, the famous old pioneer from the J.A. Ranch in Powder Canyon. But Dad... I can remember one time all those cowboys when they would have their meetings in the morning, and one day they didn't know I was a son, and I heard this one guy said, "Well, there's that guy from Illinois," you know, talking about that, and kind of at first it seemed like they were almost mocking him, making a little bit of fun, but after he started writing some poetry and articles, one day my sister Jane woke up in the Denver paper, here's an article written by her father that she didn't know was going to be in the Denver, or whatever their thing is called, you know. But anyway, he got to where, and he's always been a historian, reading everything, you know, that he could. I didn't get the reading gene like him. He just keeps reading and reading and reading. But it got to where those guys respected him, invited him to everything they did, you know. There were a lot of, it wasn't just that. It was the Western music that, I mean, he loved everything. He loved music, anything to do with the Old West. And I tell you what, there were so many events, Lubbock, every year. We went to Branson, had big things in Branson. And Dad got to be kind of a superstar. Just yesterday, I emailed because I saw a picture of Byron Price, who is the curator. He had been a curator of the Cody Museum and the curator at the National Cowboy Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City and in Canyon, Texas at the big, he's done it all. And he's the guy also that, like Dad, they would ask to write the preface to the book after the deal. And I sent that picture to him, emailed to him, and he said, oh, Don, because I hadn't seen him for 2 years up in Enid at a deal that Dad put together because it was going to be the 150th anniversary of the Chisholm Trail. And we had a big day, and Byron came and talked, and we made awards for him, and he'd put there Dr. Byron Price, and I was standing there, and he hadn't seen Byron for a long time. And Byron came up to Dad, said, Chick, I don't know if you know this or not, but I never did get my doctorate. Well, Dad gave him an honorary Western doctor's that day. But I was really glad. He said, come see me. I'm there in Norman at OU. And, of course, my son Travis is just graduating there. He said, come down and see me. He goes, I'd love to see you. And he hadn't seen that picture of my dad and him when my dad was giving him another award. Dad loved to go give awards. That's what West Quest was all about.
Wow.
He'd laser something really good. I remember Michael Martin Murphy saying something like, it was... You know, he'd had all these awards, and these guys are tired of awards. But he said, I'd rather have the award than any award I've ever had.
Really? Michael Martin Murphy told you that. Yeah. That's pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
I would keep waiting for him to write. Maybe he'll write a song to, or do a song to one of your poems. That would be really cool, wouldn't it?
That would be cool.
You bet.
That would be cool.
Glenn, a lot of work's gone into this event coming up Saturday. This celebration of life, I know that Dale had told us it was going to have a Western theme, and that's as far as he went. But tell us what could we expect when we go. I'm assuming there's going to be a big crowd there.
Well, we really don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's at 2 o'clock they are going to have the flag ceremony with the color guard, I believe. Other than that, I picture it as a come and go. You know, I'm worried it's going to be brutal on my mom because that's a long time. It's going to be a tough time, and so she still. It seems like that's when she gets upset, when she really starts talking about Dad, but the whole day of I don't know what to expect really. We're going to have some food coming in, and like 3 o'clock, Milanus is going to have some burgers and pork patties and stuff, just hopefully to feed people some. But we've kind of missed the lunch hour. Hopefully we'll have drinks, but there's going to be a slideshow. Dale's putting together a slideshow. We're going to have my daughter's putting together a bunch of stuff with pictures on the tables and stuff. So there's some pretty crazy pictures from when we were pretty young, and I'm not necessarily proud of all of them, I think we've gotten to the point that it is going to be a celebration. It's not going to be a wake. It's going to be a celebration, and that's what we wanted to begin with. Dad originally did not want a funeral. He was cremated. We are going to have his cremated remains there. Don built, the urn that it's in, lasered it. Something interesting to see for sure. But we're kind of waiting to see how it all plays out is what it comes down to, and, I don't know what other people are really expecting, but I hope they just show up and have a good time.
I think it's a day to honor your dad, and that's what it's meant to be, I believe, to celebrate the wonderful life that he led.
As Dale was saying before, the stories that come out, particularly the ones when he was teaching at Russell School in sixth grade, and some of those stories have been confirmed. You would not believe them, in reality in this day and age, but they've been confirmed, and so I'm not sure what to tell you on some of that, but it's amazing though how his reach was, as Dale was putting it, but I'll tell you this though, I had a chance at, I bought a piece of ground over by Rainmaker Campground. All of a sudden, a year or two later, Don Logson comes to me and wants to know if I'm wanting to buy more ground, and I'm like, well, I'm always looking, so to speak, as whether I can afford it, but he's like, your dad was my favorite teacher in the world, I'll basically sell you all this at a discount, and I mean, what do you do, when you hear stuff like that, it's just hard to believe, I've had some help putting together my farm purchases, but Dad was a big influence on a lot of it. So,
to remember when I was delivering propane for Marion Wolf, I'd go to somebody's farm. I remember Howard Keeman was one of them. I didn't like them teachers. I didn't like them books. But your dad, I loved him. And look forward to going to school. We played football.
There you go.
He just loved it.
Dale and Glenn Bishop, our guests today, were talking about the celebration of life coming up Saturday and a whole bunch of stories about growing up the cowboy way and growing up the Bishop way right here in Litchfield, Illinois. And we'll have more with the boys in just a couple of minutes. 16 in front of 4 o'clock, Don Bishop, Glenn Bishop with us, talking about Dr. Walter Chick Bishop, the celebration of life, coming up Saturday from 1 until 7 at the Litchfield Community Center. And you're welcome to attend. They hope you attend. Everybody, I think you'll get a chance to visit with an awful lot of people who Dr. Bishop had impacted their lives. Guys, one of the things that we have touched on has been growing up. The other thing to touch on is some of the other people that Dr. Bishop touched and made their lives better. And I know that he touched thousands of people across this Midwest here and across the country.
Yep. Yep. I was thinking the other day about all the people that know my dad, and some of them still don't even know that he's passed away. But maybe because he grew up and he wanted to stay in Litchfield, he loved Litchfield, his dad was from Litchfield, his family's from Litchfield, he was proud to be from Litchfield. And maybe that's how you get so many friends. But I got to thinking, you know, if it had been me that passed away, I've had thousands of friends also. But most of them would be like, oh, Don, he's gone. You know, he was a nice guy. But it wouldn't be anything like this. Nobody would show up. You know, my dad had that type of charisma. He made you feel like you're the most important person there. My buddy, Larry Hantla, Ben's best friend, Larry Hantla, when he was visiting Dad in the hospital and came out there afterwards, and Dad wasn't doing good that day, and Larry said something that really touched me. He said, you know, I could do anything because your dad thought I could.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. When I knew your dad and had run across having conversations with him quite a number of times, not as many as Terry did, because Terry was here when I was gone, but I became friends with your dad when I was about 19 years old, and when I came back for the fifth time to this radio station back about 3 years ago, he was one of the first people that came out to welcome me back, and boy, it's good to see you, John, I'm glad you're back, and We visited a few minutes, and then I think I saw him one more time, but I hadn't seen him for a while. One thing that I think anybody who knew Chick Bishop would say, that if he met you once, and if you made any kind of an impact on him at all, he never forgot you. He remembered something about you. He would tell you, it's a pleasure to see you. He was respectful. It was a great quality that your dad had.
My buddy Bill Beerbaum showed up, and he's driving here right now from Nebraska to be at it. He was stationed in Alaska, too. But anyway, and Dave Stromat, just a great friend I haven't seen for a long time. They all sending me messages when Dad died. And Dave's like, man, I'll miss not seeing your dad around.
Oh, sure. No doubt. No doubt. Glenn, the opportunity to do what you've done, to carry on the farming end of it, what kind of influence do you think that your dad will have in his children's lives all the way through? I mean, do you find yourself doing things to say, this is exactly what Dad did? I remember Dad doing this, and here I'm just like him. Do you find yourself doing that?
I do, but I also have learned from his mistakes also. In driving around the neighborhood, North Litchfield in particular, he'll tell me is I could have bought that farm for $300 an acre, and I didn't. Uh-huh. You know, I've been a little more aggressive in that, and I've also, you know, my two daughters understand that, and the ground will stay in the family, you know, for sure. They've already committed to that, and so, you know, the things there is, you know, you got to keep looking forward and forward fast. Otherwise, you know, you're just going to sit there and you know, dwell in the past, so to speak. But he had so many opportunities that for one reason or another, he did not actually take himself. But that also backs up the fact is how much he helped other people. But he also could have done more for himself than he actually did. And I think he regretted that a little bit in the fact that, you know, the other part of sitting on the house on the hill there, as I call it, or the hill, he's overlooking the 400 acres that he sold back in the late 60s. That would tear me up if I had to do that. And he survived that, though, and he mentioned it every now and then, but not very often. You know, the fact of selling the ground was something that really hurt him.
Land was very important to him.
Yes.
Because the horses walked on it.
Well, that's true. And I want to back up a second, too. His love for horses is amazing because his father actually trained horses down in Texas during World War I. My Aunt Betty, his sister, just died basically 5 weeks before him, and we found a bunch of the letters written by my grandpa, his father, talking about training horses for the Army in World War One, and so he was one heck of a horseman himself, too. So he came about it very, very, I guess, genetically himself.
I saw a picture on Facebook, I guess Jane had put up, I think, and it was your mom and dad very young. I think there were four of the six of you in the picture. I don't remember exactly, but it was a gorgeous picture of long ago, you know. Those pictures, at least there's one that didn't burn up. Thank goodness they didn't all go.
I don't know where these are showing up. I think Charles had some, maybe Dale had some. I had one that I didn't know I had that was taken at but Lincoln at Thanksgiving that is going to be seen.
Okay. But you got these pictures that what you have are going to be out there. That's
well,
great.
We got big families all around, and pictures came pouring in.
Oh, sure.
There's 500 or 600 of them that are going to be somewhat on display.
Oh, that's terrific. Celebration of Life, Saturday, 1 o'clock at the Litchfield Community Center for Dr. Walter Chick Bishop. Gone, but certainly not forgotten, and probably never, never, never will be. One of Montgomery County's real treasures. Glenn and Don Bishop, our guests today, talking about the Celebration of Life and just talking about growing up Bishop. Guys, we got 5 minutes.
Okay. I got one little story that's kind of cool about my dad. I was laying in a hotel room in Las Vegas, and my wife called me and said, "Hey, this guy wants to talk to you about your book." And mostly about the likes about it was about how much you mentioned your dad and how you stuck by your dad. A lot of guys don't do that after, you know.
Oh, sure.
So anyway, the guy called me, and it's Larry Bastian. And I don't know if you recognize that name, but famous country western songwriter. And he said, "I bought your book from your wife at that booth, and we're driving them home to California. My wife keeps crying." And I'm like, "Really?" And he says, "This is Larry Bastian." And I happen to know who that was because of he wrote one of Dad's favorite songs, Cowboy Bill, that Garth Brooks covered.
Oh, okay.
And then The Rodeo, he wrote that one. And he... I was listening to Garth on the podcast or the Sirius one day, and he said we couldn't come up with the name for whatever. And Larry and they walked, took a walk, and Larry said, "Well, what are you talking about? It's Unanswered Prayers," and that's what the title of the name.
Okay.
But anyway, with everything that out of the book, Larry says, "Hey, you need to become a songwriter." And I said, "I just don't know how to do it, and I'm pretty busy. I'm flying all the time." And he said, "Hey, I've got to meet with Garth Brooks in Nashville this weekend. Can you go?" And I said, "I'm flying." Well, that's probably the stupidest thing I ever did is not to go with Larry to meet with Garth, who is from the same town I'm living in now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway,
that's true.
Didn't do it. But he called the last time Dad was at my house, and he said, "I'm going to write something for your dad." And, well, I think it had just, I can't remember how it worked, but I think it had just showed up. But it was a handwritten, it said, "One of One, Cowboy Bill." He wrote the whole song for my dad, and Dad loved it.
I'll be darned. Yeah. That's terrific. Glenn, got about 2 minutes. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to change the perspective a little bit and let everybody know the dad can be pretty brutal also.
He was
in the Army, and he was, I believe, a drill sergeant even, and he expected us to act like that too, you know, as far as, you know, so there was, you know, we got our share of whippings, that's for darn sure. My older brothers think they always got the worst, but they didn't see them all, so I'll contradict that one, you know, heavily. But I'll also tell you, I told a little bit of this story early, you know. Don and I got into a fight one day in the kitchen, and we broke the knob off of the oven, the stove or whatever you call it, and we didn't get in trouble for fighting. We got in trouble for not going outside to fight, and then we broke the stove. So then not long after that, Dad bought 4 sets of boxing gloves, and we had regular boxing matches for us boys to take our frustrations out.
And
neighbors came too, you know, friends. You'll be, you know, became boxing matches, not necessarily, you know, brutality, but you know, it was a way of, you know, it actually worked. But on the other hand, my mom told people that she was terribly afraid that I would get myself killed because I had no fear of anybody of size, because of the first four boys, I was the youngest. So everybody's quite, I mean, even though there's only like 1 year gap, like 4 years gap between all four of us, maybe four and a half, I'm still 4 years younger and I'm getting the snot beat out of me all the time. but I'm still fighting.
Of course, of course. I can understand. Got about a minute. This celebration of life on Saturday is going to be attended by an awful lot of people. And you guys are going to be there. You're going to be proud. I know it's going to be hard on your mom. So hold her up, you know, give her your love. And you don't need me to tell you to do that. But I'm looking forward to dropping by myself. It'll be late in the afternoon, but I'll be there. So thanks for dropping in. Thanks for telling the story. Thanks for the copy of the book. I love the book, Don. And again, the website is
OldWestCedarMill.com.
OldWestCedarMill.com. Go there and order the book. It's called The Code of the West, Then, Now, and Forever. You'll love it. WSMI, WSMI FM 106.1. That's where we are. And thank you guys for being our guests today, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.